We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here's Matt Michaels and Brad Pranago.
Hello and welcome. It is another rousing edition of the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. I'm Matt Michaels. Brad Pranago, hi.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
I'm here. We're in the February. It's the peak basketball time, so a little sleepy, but we'll get through it. It helps you to be awake and more energized with the way that especially the men's basketball team's been performing lately.
And we will talk about that in a second. It is peak crossover season, so we'll introduce our guest after we introduce you to our friends at Shelter Insurance. They power the podcast, recently ranked highest in customer satisfaction among auto insurers in the central region, 4 out of 5 years in a row by J.D. Power. Shelter Insurance, we're your shield, we're your shelter. As the spring season and the home stretch gets ready for Mizzou women's golf, we welcome in the Tigers head coach, Caroline Westrup, who is here with us today. Coach, thank you for making the time, and welcome to warmth, I guess relatively, from the depths of winter.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be on with you guys today.
I didn't realize until we were talking just before we went on air that you had a connection to Dennis Gates, and that's part of the reason that you ended up here at Mizzou. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I graduated from Florida State, and Dennis was the assistant coach there, and I worked with a sports info office during my off season because I love basketball so much. When I found out that he took the job in March there, and I wrote a message to him, congratulations, and then suddenly in May, I get a call asking to, you know, interview for this position, and I called him right away. I was like, so why should I take this job, and what's great about Mizzou? And so he was part of my interview process there, and also one of the reasons I think that I actually, like, I took this job, just from all the good things that he was talking about.
Yeah, and I think we see how that's going for him and his program right now here at Mizzou. You know, that connection at Florida State, that was a place where you had so much success. When you were growing up in Europe, did you think American college golf was in your future? How did it come about that you got to the States and Florida State?
So, yeah, funny you asked that, because, yes, I always wanted to play on the LPGA Tour. That was my number one goal, but me and my dad had these, like, different different steps. Like, I want to be part of the national team. I want to play college golf. I want to play on the European Tour and then LPGA. So college golf was something that I always wanted to do, but it was Arizona State I was going to go to. And I did a visit there, and I actually verbally committed there. That summer, before you sign your national letter of intent in November, I ran into Jonas Blix, who now plays on the PGA Tour, and he was at Florida State, and he said, you should really consider Florida State. And at the time, they were not really ranked very high, but I said, you know, I have one more visit. I went and visited in October and committed and signed in November, and I don't regret it for a second.
Very cool. So I had a lot of success there. So before that, as Matt mentioned, growing up in Sweden, Aarhus, Sweden. I just wanted to make sure I try to pronounce that right. Sure. You know, I looked it up on YouTube. It looks like a beautiful place. What was it like growing up there?
I mean, golf is, it's number three golf course in Sweden. So very, like, I would say a beach town, like more of a tourist, like in summer it's packed with people because the beach is so nice there. Yeah, talking Sweden, you wouldn't think so, but no, very, and then summer, yeah, very, golf is, you know, golf town. So I would say, like, you know, I grew up on that golf course.
So it was basically the fate, in other words, you found your way to the golf course and you picked it up. Was there ever a time that you thought, this is not something I want to pursue? I mean, if you have dreams of the LPGA Tour from a young age, that sounds like it's go all the time.
Yeah, so, I mean, my dad inspired me a lot. He was the national team coach for Sweden, so I was around great players all the time. Like, Henrik Stenson was one of my babysitters. you know, so, like, being around great players and traveled a lot with my dad to European championships and fell in love with the sport that way. And I did, but he put me in all these different sports too. But, like, yeah, dad is very smart. He put me in sports where, you know, it would benefit golf, and he was just hoping that I would end up picking golf.
So, in other words, like, you developed a slap shot for a little while, maybe, and yep. Then it was, okay, golf's a little bit better, I don't get hit, right?
Yeah. No, so I did gymnastics too for a very long time, and then golf took over more and more, and then, yeah.
How was Henrik Stenson as a babysitter?
Well, so he, like, didn't, you know, do diapers or anything like that. So, but, no, he was one of my favorites. So, like, I would always go to him when dad had to go to, you know, meetings and stuff like that during tournaments. So he would take care of me. And, yeah, no, always looked up to him. And until this day, I mean, if I see him, like, you know, he always asks and watch out for me even when I played on tour. And, so, yeah, no, great.
I mean, it had to be great, right? Because if not, he would have to answer to the national team coach.
Oh, yeah. And I always got that all the time because my dad is known to be very, very tough. And he would always say, like, how was he to actually be your dad? Like, we were never allowed to eat candy on the trips. Like, were you allowed to eat candy?
So when, obviously, the goal was there at a very early age to be a pro. Was there a specific, I don't know, shot or tournament or just a specific round where you realized, hey, I really do have what it takes to eventually be a pro?
I don't know. My mentality was always like that was what I wanted to do. But obviously playing with the national team, the Swedish national team, and be able to play against the best European players, European championships, like we won three of them as a team. And then also I got to go and play the World Amateur Championship in South Africa and won that. And that was I started school in January, and that was that fall. So it was my freshman year, and a lot of people thought I would turn pro early, and yes, that was definitely on my mind, but I wanted to have a degree, but at that point, you know, and then be able to play against the best players in college as well and see them turning pro, that made it even more, like, reassuring that this is definitely something that I can do.
You mentioned the national team experience that you had at a young age. Is that something that you think contrasts golf in Europe and across much of the world with the United States? Because it's not necessarily like the state of Missouri is always putting together its all-star team to go against Kansas or Texas or anything like that. You're a nation amongst many other nations, and so that's something that is kind of foundational for you in your golfing experience at a young age, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Like, especially, I mean, you see nowadays, too, like, Sweden produces a lot of great golfers, and it's really all thanks to the Federation, in my opinion. They do a really good job, take you in on an early age and do camps and see potential in players, and then, yes, you get picked on to be on the national team, but, like, you have camps and you get education on, you know, course management. We used to run, like, 3 kilometers on time every time we we met on a camp and did, you know, strength and conditioning tests and golf tests and how to practice and all that, and then be able to get the experience on playing in Europe and travel. I think that's has a lot of good foundation for why a lot of Europeans player right now are they're taking after Sweden. But actually, so we found out on our women's convention this past year that United States now is going to form a national team with the USGA. So it's in process, so that would be cool to see what they can do.
So you've got that international, you know, background, and you spent some time coaching at IMG Academy in Florida. I'm guessing you picked up some pretty talented golfers or worked with some really talented golfers there also. So that kind of ties into a question about recruiting for Mizzou women's golf in your current role now. What's the right mix of those international types or the folks from IMG Academy type places in Florida or a little bit closer to home? What's the right combination, you think?
I think half and half, like half Americans and half internationals, is kind of what I'm looking for. That's what we had at Florida State, and I also know other teams kind of have that, and it's just a really cool experience to be able to get to know other players and their cultures and where they're coming from. And I mean, that's what college is all about, right? You have 4 years, that's probably going to be the four best of your life, and networking especially. And like already now, like, okay, I'm going to go over and play in Europe. I'm going to call one of my former teammates and go visit her and see the world. So I think about half and half, that's what I'm looking for right now. And it looks like for when it's 2024, fall of 2024, I think we will have that half and half.
When you think about that mix of cultures, does it also relate to skill and playing style? Because I think it makes sense to folks in this country, if there's someone from the Midwest who plays in the fall, they're going to have a different skill set to play in those conditions than maybe somebody who's played in Arizona in the sunshine their whole life. Do you find that in that team format too, that players help each other grow because you can't play golf the same way in different places?
Absolutely. I would totally agree on that. You know, we have a Swedish guy on the team right now, and just looking how he practices, I tell the girls all the time, just see how he practices and try to pick up on some stuff, because what he does is really, really good, in my opinion. And you know, same thing there. Like, you come from Sweden, you're more likely to have played in colder weather. And so someone that, I mean, we have a girl from Florida right now, but she's a junior, so she's been here for a little time. But just, you know, help each other and get better that way. I'm very excited for this fall. We have a girl from Malaysia coming. So I bet she's going to bring in a lot of great experience from what she's used to. And then vice versa.
For the weekend Warriors, this is not necessarily golf season, but for your team, have you been able to get outside and get on the course at least a little bit this winter?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've been pretty lucky with the weather so far. We've only had a couple days where we've had to be inside, but we've still been able to, you know, hit and see the ball flight because of, thanks to our, you know, facilities that we have. We're fortunate to be able to pull up our walls and hit from inside to outside, so that's been very nice. But yeah, no, I feel like we're really ready for the spring season. I'm very excited.
You know, you came to Missouri, you got familiar with your team in the fall, and then you come right out and they say, oh, by the way, coach, we haven't had a poor weekend at the Johnny Imes, our home tournament, in a long, long time. Do you feel a little bit of pressure there that weekend to go ahead and pull out the win and keep a streak alive? I know you had to be happy with the way it turned out.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, Coach Coop has done an amazing job on winning that tournament. What is it, in eight years in a row? Something like that. So obviously having that and starting off the tournament, I feel like we did a really good job though. Like, I removed our first tournament that we were going to have because I wanted to have more time with the team before our first tournament. And then it happened to be that my daughter was also born 4 days before the tournament. So it was a lot, but I was out there. I didn't coach during the tournament, but I was out there watching, and my assistant coach and volunteer coach did an amazing job, and were able to pull off the win. We were a little bit behind there after the second day, but we had a really good third day, and so very, very good job from the team and the coaches there.
You mentioned your new daughter, and you were telling us before we went on air, you had a pretty interesting story about her whenever she was born, right? That had some, she'll have some Mizzou ties for her entire life, I guess.
Oh, for sure. I thought she was going to be, a Georgia girl, but then moving up here, and when we got here in July, I was 8 months pregnant, and then I had a recruit in town. We went to the football game, and it was a hot day, and then the next morning we went to breakfast at First Watch, and I started having contractions, and we went straight to the hospital after that, and she was born that afternoon. Also that day, we moved into our new house.
Oh my gosh.
So it was within what, a week, I had a daughter, moved into a new house, and won my first tournament.
That's pretty good.
I mean, if anybody ever asks for a resume, you just take that week and you take a snapshot and you say, you go ahead and read this on your own.
Yeah.
And you get back to me when you're ready to talk. You know, as you have gotten to know your team, what is the thing that excites you the most about your group of athletes as you head into this spring?
I think we've done a really good job in the offseason. We've worked a lot on especially short game and wedges. That was something, an area that I felt like we really needed to improve on as a team to get our scores to be lower. What I really excited about is that actually, like, we don't mind when it's bad weather. When it's bad weather, us as a team, we're strong, and we play way better in those type of conditions. So finding tournaments where it's actually tougher weather is gonna be better for us. But we've done a really good job to prepare, and the girls are very excited. We have some good goals for this spring semester that we really want to achieve, and we've come together as a team. We had a really good team bonding event to start off this spring season, and I can just see that they're ready and they've come together as a team and want to accomplish these goals. So I'm very excited about it.
You mentioned Georgia, and that's where you were coaching before you came up here to Mizzou. Had a lot of success last season, getting to the quarterfinals at the NCAA championships in Scottsdale. What did you learn from that year at the Bulldogs that's going to help you here in Columbia?
That you can have a really bad season and then still finish off really well, because we struggled in spring. We had a good fall, but in the spring we had 10 girls that were all really good, and so we flip-flopped the lineup a lot, and we couldn't really find our lineup until at the end. It was the same girls that went to the SEC championship that went to regionals and nationals. SEC was still bad, but same thing there, and that's something that I took here. It was like, we don't have to be the best players in the country to come together and have a common goal. And they, from SECs to regionals, like, they were so, like, pumped up, and they supported each other, they kept each other accountable, and just had that mindset of, we're gonna make it to nationals no matter what. And same girl who could not break 80 at SECs finished 6th at nationals, mm-hmm. and 4th at regionals individually. Same player, but something happened up in her mind and mentally and just said that we can do this, and we did. And so that's something you see, I think, at basketball too, and that I've told my team, like, there's not a lot of five stars on that team, you know, but they have come together as a team with Coach Gate. Obviously, have done an amazing job of getting, I mean, all these transfers, right? But they have come together as a team. They've never played together, but they're still accomplishing great things right now. And that's what I'm trying to, you know, tell my students as well, that nothing is possible, really.
You know, a streak like that for an individual, like you mentioned, you have a round of 80, and then you're starting to fire, you know, low 70s and 60s and get yourself to the place you want to be. How much does something like that impact the selection for a head coach? Because you have to select your team to go out there in each individual tournament. Do you base it upon form? Do you base it upon the fact that, hey, somebody might have had a bad round and they just need to play through it? How much of that to you is production, and how much of that is talent, or can you not even really describe how you get that mix to get the right group out there every weekend?
So for this tournament that we started off with, we had a qualifier. So we had three rounds, 18 holes, and top three made the lineup, and then I had two coaches' picks. And that's kind of how we had it in the fall too, or I exempt some players that had a really good tournament that would automatically go to the next one. So for this tournament, I did pick one that was actually, it was not in based off of score. It was based off of what she did over Christmas break. So that was our new girl, Kate, who is from England. She's from England / Dubai / America. So her mom works in Dubai. So they spent Christmas over there, and she had a really good break where she played really good. Came here, though, not really, had never played the golf course before. So she had a bad qualifier.
Right.
But that's kind of what I overlooked, like, you know, and she also went to play in Florida and had played good there. So instead of taking maybe the next one in line, I picked her over that person.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the scheduling dynamic in college golf, where you've got a fall portion and then you've got a gap where you're not in any competitions, and then you're in the spring portion. And you had a situation where somebody actually joins the team midway through the quote unquote season. So how do you approach, like, the fall events with an eye toward, hey, it's going to be 5-6 months before we get to the SEC championships and the NCAA championships and stuff like that, and we may not even have the same roster in the spring that we have in the fall?
Yeah, I mean, that is a little different, obviously, from other sports. You usually have a fall or a spring season. We have both, but you know, I'm very on to get to know my players, so I sit down with them. I had individual meetings a lot with them, so at the end of when we were done with the fall season, I sat down with each single one of them, and they had to prepare goals for what they wanted to accomplish over these 2-3 months. It could be personal, it could be mental, it could be physical, but they needed to have something that they wanted to focus on and accomplish before we started qualifying again. Just staying on top. I think goals are really, really important. I've seen that since I did that since I was very little, and have something to strive for and not feel like, oh, well, I can take it easy now. We don't have a tournament until 3 or 4 months. No, that's the time to get better, and not just, you know, sit on the couch. Yes, you need to rest as well. I'm all for that, but stay competitive, and that's why I encouraged them to go play over break as well. So we lose anything and lose the mentality.
So they have their goals for success as individuals. When you look at what would make this spring season successful in your mind, what does that look like to you?
I think, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the short game inside of 100 yards, for us as a team to get better there, I think we're going to climb up the leaderboard a lot. But then also, I think it's very important that we are a team. And that's something I tell everyone. every day. We're family. I want it to be like a family-oriented where, you know, family fight and always doesn't agree, and that's okay. But you come together at the end and we all love each other. Because like what I saw at Georgia, when we came together as a team, I think you can accomplish great things. And so that's what I just keep reminding them of.
So you've got two young kids. And so I was going to ask about, have you got the daycare situation taken care of?
Yep.
Have you got the restaurant rotation and where the grocery store is and all that in Columbia? Have you gotten a feel for the town a little bit yet?
Yeah. No, I don't need a GPS anymore to get around. I'm very proud of myself. No. And Dennis Gates helped me there too with daycare. All of the basketball staff, I guess, has their kids at the same daycare, so I run into them all the time. Nice. But that's very nice. Grocery store. You know, I love Aldi, so I always go to Aldi and get my groceries.
Well, it's like a little slice of home,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know, right? It's German, so almost.
Close enough.
Yeah. So it's very nice. And then obviously having recruits in town and trying out different restaurants that way. I have a couple of my favorites now. So
what are your, is IKEA like too touristy or too basic?
No, I love IKEA.
Okay, you're about that.
Yeah. You know, if I'm in St. Louis or whatever, I need to go in there and have some Swedish meatballs and buy some Swedish candy and just walk around. Just, you know, feels like home.
How are their meatballs? Are they up to Swedish standards or?
Nah, not quite, but I think I would say I make better meatballs than the IKEA does,
okay.
But yeah,
okay. Yeah, when you've got the homemade recipe, that is a big improvement. It's like, you know, it's like getting the fix. I can get my hamburger anywhere,
yep.
But I'm going to get it right here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the difference.
Yep.
100%. Well, we're so glad you're here and so glad that you've settled into Columbia and glad that there is a spring season to come that is very exciting for Mizzou Women's Golf under Caroline Westrup's direction. And thank you for taking a few minutes to chat with us and get to know you here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. We can't wait for the season and look forward to talking to you again right here.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. It's been great. Thank you.
That's Caroline Westrup, and we will be back. We'll talk a little bit of men's hoops after you hear from our friends at Shelter Insurance.
A shield against the elements. Comfort in the midst of chaos. Shelter in the aftermath of destruction. For 75 years, Shelter Insurance has remained true to our promise to be there when you need us most. This is the heartbeat of our company, our why. And throughout our history, it has never wavered. Shelter Insurance. For your auto, home, and life. We're your shield. We're your shelter.
And we're back to the podcast, which is also powered by Socket Fiber, the fastest, most reliable internet, combined with local service and simple billing. Contact Socket today for voice, data, and internet services for your home and business. 1-800-SOCKET-3 or visit socket.net. Also, big thanks to our friends at Raceline. With over 30 years of turnkey project execution, Raceline is an industry leader in engineering, manufacturing, and installation of modular process systems.
Click. Vroom. Vroom like you would on a drive or drives or something you do in golf. And we just had Coach Westrup on. So it all comes together. All comes together. Coach Westrup trying to find solutions, you know, on your approach shots. Raceline obviously can provide you other solutions, maybe a little bit off the golf course typically.
If your golf ball goes vroom, I feel you will be DQ'd.
Hey, man.
I'm just going to put that out there.
I got, you know, I just want to break 100 once or twice in 2023. And if I have to get a golf ball that goes vroom, then so be it.
Don't we all?
Goodness gracious, I'm so bad. We should have gotten some tips from her before we made her leave.
But. Yeah, but we weren't even, I mean, she's a pro, right? So if it's a pro and it's a lesson, you probably have to pony up. I mean, I think she would have been generous, but I'm not sure it would have helped us without some serious instruction.
It's a fun element, and we'll look forward. Hopefully, we can have Coach Westrup on again down the road, and maybe some of her players. I mean, she touched on the journey of, you know, for example, one her newest player who's from England and spent some time in Dubai and is now here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about unofficially some folks that she's talking to about new recruits that may be coming in from all over the world. And she mentioned Malaysia, I believe. And so there's going to be some really interesting stories from people who are going to be Tiger athletes. athletes in the future, and hopefully they'll also have a lot of success on the course.
Yeah, we certainly hope for the best this spring, and hey, you play your best at the right time of the year. That's all that matters. That Georgia team last season is proof. So we'll see how it shakes out, but really excited for what it looks like for Mizzou women's golf here in the spring.
And how about Dennis Gates on the recruiting trail? I mean, we've seen the players he's brought in, and he's also helping to haul in a women's golf coach as well.
Well, here's the thing. We were talking off the air, and I said, so as soon as Coach Gates was involved, like, it was a done deal, right? Because he is. He's a good recruiter. He's a personable fellow. I've told this story to people before. I'll tell it here. And maybe you can use this as some sort of illumination as to why this is going as well as it's going. The Tigers got their 17th win over LSU. As we record this, it was just last night, 87-77. Kobe Brown had scored 23 points against LSU in four previous matchups combined. He scored 26 on 10 of 11 shooting in the game against the Bayou Bengals at home on Wednesday night. But meeting Dennis Gates, we met him here for a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time we met him, and we both came away impressed with the type of person that he is and how engaging he was and the thoughts he had towards building a basketball program. But the next day, I was asked to MC an event at the Student Center that was kind of a pump up. Welcome, Coach Gates. At that time as well, the gymnastics team was getting ready to be sent off to Fort Worth to compete in the NCAA championships. So it was an exciting time. And there was a decent amount of students at the Student Center over lunchtime that were there for that reason. Of course, it was April, so finals were coming up and coursework was getting kind of serious, and there were a lot of students who just wanted to eat their lunch and read their book, right? They weren't very interested in what was going on. And Dennis Gates introduced him. He got up on stage, and he got, I'd say, probably 85% of the students in that student center who were not engaged, come on, stand up. No, you over in the corner, stand up. Like, he engaged with everybody in this room, none of whom he'd ever met, and he got the student center on campus to do a slow clap with him in the middle of their lunch. They were like, well, it's the new basketball coach, I guess so, why not? And then by the end of it, he had made something happen from nothing. And I think of what this basketball team was perceived to be before the season. A few Horizon League players, you know, a Kobe Brown who had plenty of potential, a transfer guard from Clemson who kind of was in a reserve role there, you know, the JUCO player of the year perhaps, but a junior college player you don't know. A freshman with potential but unproven as a freshman. And how does all this amalgamate? How does all this come together? And it turns out they set the nets on fire is how they come together, and they play for each other. It was another impressive performance because Missouri led by 10 early. They led by no fewer than 9 the rest of the way after establishing that double-digit lead. Never felt that they were out of control. Even when LSU was going on a 9-0 run towards the end of the first half, Mizzou was on a 4.5-minute drought, and during it, you just couldn't help but think, I know I was thinking to myself, Brad, man, that's not enough points. If Mizzou's going to be on this drought, you got to score more than 9 points to make this a game, because the Tigers had established a quick 18-point lead. Missouri shot 56% from the field in the game, could have been higher. Shot 48% from 3 in the game, could have been higher. Got out-rebounded on the offensive glass by 10, could have been way better on the glass in this game. And still, it's a comfortable win over an LSU team that still has some growing to do. They had 6 in double figures, LSU, and were never particularly close in the game. That's how well Mizzou put it away. They can score more than you.
Right.
That's it. They can score more than you. And on the games, hopefully here in the future, where they peak, and Dennis Gates has said, and I agree, they haven't played their best game yet. If this Missouri team finds a peak of offensive efficiency and defensive stops, or turning some of these rebounds into extra possessions, they can go toe-to-toe with anyone. They proved it in a big win over Iowa State. They proved it in handling their business against LSU. The rest of the way, we're talking about what the seed is, barring something we cannot possibly foresee. And that is an immense credit to Dennis Gates, his staff, and what has been built in such a short time over at Mizzou Arena.
If the season ended today, it would be a 5-win improvement from last year. I mean, it's basically a whole new roster with the exception of Kobe Brown and you know, one or two others who didn't play quite as much. So, I mean, it's been quite a turnaround there. In the last three games, it's been just remarkable outside shooting, and that continued on the game Wednesday night. 48%, 13 made threes, which is actually the fewest threes in this three-game stretch. They made more against Iowa State and against Ole Miss. Of course, 11 of those came in the first half. One of the things that pops out, so four different players made at least 2 3-pointers in that game Wednesday night, and Demoy Hodge was not one of them. He made 0 3-pointers, in fact, in the game.
So he only took 2 3-pointers, which shows you just how concerned LSU was with Hodge getting up his shot after his last two games.
Well, and that's the thing too, right? I mean, you can say, okay, well, we can't let Demoy Hodge beat us. Well, then Kobe Brown can go maybe not 5 of 6 from three every night, but he has shown he can hit the outside shot. Noah Carter has had games, including Wednesday night against LSU, where he's shown he can hit the shot. Isaiah Mosley certainly proved at Missouri State that he can hit the outside shot. He was a 40% three-point shooter at a high volume, and he appears to be really starting to come into his own and come along as a very valuable piece. You know, with Trey Gomelian out with injury, Mosley has moved into that role and is showing some really good things, not just offensively. He might have had the highlight of the night blocking that dunk attempt at the rim, which he timed absolutely perfectly. Had one or two other defensive plays that really stood out to me too. Maybe not highlight reel level stuff like the block dunk was, but he's really coming along. And if you can add him as another offensive option, like you said, Mizzou just scores more than you, and Mosley just adds on to that. Kobe Brown is the engine. I mean, it seems obvious. People can't guard Kobe Brown right now. I mean, if he's going to be hitting threes, then you've got to put, you know, a guard or a faster player on him, and that means he's still strong like Bull, so he's just going to go down to the block and run you over and get his buckets that way if you put a guard on him. So he's, you know, obviously all SEC and is making a case to be the SEC player of the year. It has been a tremendous, not just, you know, turnaround for the program, not just the amalgamation, as you said with your pretty word there, but the development of a guy like Kobe Brown, who, to be frank, was not a great outside shooter his first 3 years here, to a point where he's, I believe, in the 40% range as a three-point shooter at this point as we speak this morning. It's been just an incredible coaching job by Dennis Gates.
He was entering yesterday's play the second highest scorer in conference games. He's averaging 18 per conference matchup, so he improved upon that. The only one that's better is the freshman of the year in the SEC from Alabama, in Williams. So you understand just what territory that puts Kobe in. And by the way, he was going against a pretty good transfer in his own right in KJ Williams. That was the one-on-one matchup for a lot of the possessions, and Kobe did what Kobe does. I mean, when he wanted to back you down, you were giving him ground. When he wanted to face you up, and even if you had a hand in his face, he was going to hit the shot. It was so impressive to see the composure of his game. He added 8 rebounds and 5 assists. Even down the stretch, when LSU, to their credit under Matt McMahon, were playing to the very final whistle, I mean, he came from behind and forced a held ball on a shot attempt in the final 4 or 5 minutes of the game. I was like, where did you come from? And you just took the shot attempt away from him and nearly snatched it right out of his hands. It was so impressive. But I actually think the highlight of the game was something that you watching the game texted me about. And I said, oh, yeah. And I didn't mention this on the wrap-up show. It was late, all right? It was late and I was tired. But there was a fast break play where Nick Honor ends up with the ball in transition. And just to show you the reckless abandon this team plays with, we've seen these home run passes of 70 feet, and then they find a way to finish. Noah Carter had one of those, a really tough off-balance shot in this game. But Honor puts his head up, and he sees two defenders, and he sees a tiny lane. And Kobe Brown is streaking towards the basket, making a rim run. And somehow Nick Honor decides this is a roll pass from 30 feet away in transition that I'm going to bounce at everybody's ankles, and Kobe's going to pick it up and make the finish. And sure enough, Kobe did with two hands, moved to the right, flipped it up off the glass, and it made one bounce off the rim and in. And I didn't think there was a way possible to get a pass to a person in that point. You dropped your jaw at home and said, that was A-plus stuff. Like, this is just exciting basketball. It's something that has not truly been seen at Mizzou Arena for a long time in terms of offensive efficiency and the types of risks that they take. Well, the thing that I love about this team the most is they say, we take risks because risks have rewards. And we are not afraid if we are out of position. We are not afraid if we give up an open shot. Is that maybe going to be something that undoes this team in a 59-possession game down the road? Okay. It could be. I think that's fair if they don't have their most efficient night offensively, but on volume. And when the tempo gets going, you cannot tell me there's a better team in the country. You can't convince me right now at taking advantage of their volume and getting the streak to bury you than this Mizzou men's basketball team. It is just extraordinary to watch and a contrast to what a lot of college basketball teams try to do.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And if you listen to or watch Tiger Talk, and you can catch those on the Mizzou Athletics Facebook page live. You can also catch them on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast feed on the replay in case you missed them along the Tiger Network. But Coach Gates has said multiple times, you know, hey, we're going to be really aggressive defensively and we're going to take our chances. And if we get beat back door or, you know, if they lob over the top while we're fronting the post and we give up dunk every once in a while, that's okay. And that's an interesting, you don't usually hear basketball coaches say, yeah, if we get beat back door, that's okay.
That's the thing that would have made Bobby Knight throw something.
Right. It did make Bobby Knight throw something, probably. But it's such a different way of thinking about defense. And you're kind of, I mean, like you said, you're accepting the fact that, yeah, they're going to get us once or twice. They're going to have the highlight reel dunks and alley-oops and things like that. It's going to happen every once in a while. But, you know, we believe that over the course of a 40-minute game, we're going to generate more mistakes from you by getting you out of the rhythm that you're used to playing in, and that we're very used to playing this way. And that was something, you know, from LSU's perspective, they decided they were okay. You know, Mizzou was like, we want to play at this speed, and LSU was like, okay, and that you're probably going to lose when that happens, because Mizzou has got a lot more reps with this. They've been around the block a time or two, not together, but they've played so much college ball that they're already familiar with this. And yeah, like you said, it's not just that they're winning, it's a really entertaining product, and I think you see that from the attendance levels. You know, every weekend game is sold out the rest of the way now at Mizzou Arena, and that's because this is a heck of a thing to watch, and it's worth spending several hours of your weekend in Mizzou Arena to take in the squad.
Well, and to your point about LSU deciding to play with Missouri's tempo down the stretch, LSU ended at 41%, but they shot very poorly early, and what we saw from them was confusion about Missouri's switching. You know, we've seen a lot, the Tigers have played a lot of good teams at the start of the SEC campaign. It's why they were only 500 in the league coming into yesterday. Yesterday put them at 5-4, so at the halfway point of the league season, they are an above 500 team. They're not a top four seed yet, but they have a chance to do that work in these final nine conference games. But we've seen them play a lot of talented teams on the front end. And this is the first time we saw them play a team in a long time that's just a little bit more human. Like, LSU is going through some things. There's plenty of talent on that squad, don't get me wrong. But they haven't coalesced and gelled in the same way that some of these other SEC clubs have to this point in the season. And you could see them offensively passing it around, and they look up and they say, really? They're 7 on the shot clock now? Like, there was a lot of stagnation on offense until they finally decided, you know what, to heck with it. We're just going to see if we can run with these guys. But trying to run with Missouri, as you mentioned, Brad, is a fool's errand. Like, they're going to be comfortable pushing that pace and trading buckets. And then at the time of the game where it gets to be the final 6 minutes or so, then Missouri decides to take it down a notch, and Missouri decides to use some clock. Well, by then, they're in, you know, a little bit of game management mode, and you're probably cooked. You know, you've got to get your lead over Missouri. Really, you have to establish something with 10 minutes left to go in the game, and have had to have established it for some time, because otherwise these guys can either come back on you, as we've seen them prove against Arkansas in much later and dire situations. They played a tight one against UCF on a neutral, semi-neutral floor that, yeah, you get a lucky bounce at the end, but you won the game, and you played right with a very good defensive team that took you out of the stuff that you did. And now we've seen for, what, the past 3 weeks that Missouri will play its game. game and see where that lands it. And more often than not, it's going to land it in the winner's circle. They've played 16 games where they've scored 70 points or more, and they have won every single one of them. And I don't really see, Brad, that formula changing drastically unless you just have a super efficient, low possession game between two college basketball teams. And the teams in this league who I think can pull that off are Alabama, if they had to, because they're really good. Tennessee, I think, can do that. I don't know if Auburn can be super high efficiency, super low possession. Maybe A&M, because that was kind of the game that they played at Reed Arena earlier this year. There are not many teams the rest of the way that, to me, read as a team that can be very efficient with few opportunities and out-duel Mizzou in that realm, as long as the shots are falling.
Yeah, I'd say that you look at Mizzou's schedule down the stretch, and they've put themselves in a really good position at 5-4 now, where if you can take care of business in your home games, get a road game somewhere along the way against one of the teams that's in the bottom half of the league, which the Tigers still have left, then in terms of making the NCAA tournament, you're in good shape. But I agree with you. You kind of start getting greedy now when you're sitting at 17 wins after February 1st. You're telling yourself, okay, how high up can we go? What position can we put ourselves in to really make a good NCAA tournament run? And you look at these three road games coming up, starting at Mississippi State on Saturday, and then a little bit down the road in February, you got back-to-back road tests against Tennessee and Auburn. And if you can put on your resume one or two of those on top of what we feel confident, especially with this atmosphere at Mizzou Arena, what the Tigers can do at home, then you're starting to say, okay, not only are we getting in to the NCAA tournament, how far can we go in the SEC tournament? How far can we go in the NCAA tournament? And again, when you think back to where we were sitting a year ago with a team that would wind up winning just 12 games, it's been quite a rapid increase in terms of the production in, what, the 10 months or so now that Dennis Gates has been in Columbia.
Well, I just think of the math from a macro perspective, too. You have 17 wins now, and you are 5-4 in the league. You are guaranteed to be 500 in the SEC if you win four more basketball games. And by the way, if you win four more basketball games, you'll have 21 wins overall. A 21-win 500 SEC basketball team
is in
the last several cycles, that team is in. And maybe not even in by the skin of their teeth. They probably are in on like a 9-line or a 10-line.
In with wins against teams like Illinois, Iowa State. You know, we'll see. You know, Kentucky's been kind of bubbly and a bit of a mess this year. But if assuming Kentucky continues on their upward trend, that Kentucky win's going to look better and better. I mean, you can go down the line. I mean, there are some good wins mixed in there, too. It's not just all fluff.
And again, that's the bare minimum. You have four more games remaining against teams that Ken Pomeroy rates above 100. So in other words, 100 plus, which is on the wrong side of the line, right? South Carolina comes to town next Tuesday on February the 7th. That can be a very raucous and I think very entertaining environment for Tiger fans to come see a game. Then your final three are Georgia at 107, LSU on the road at 126, Ole Miss at 105 is your final home game. And those are all games at this point that you are projected to win. So if your bare minimum is beat the teams that you are quote unquote supposed to beat, and the Tigers get those supposed to beat games, they have 21 regular season wins, they are 500 in the SEC, they are in. And if you would have told us 4 months ago that that's where we'd be sitting here today, we probably all, even people who believe in the potential like Brad and I, would have been looking at you with our head cocked and said, okay.
In year one. That's the thing. I mean, you could see, you know, it seemed like, okay, these people that Coach Gates is bringing in and these recruits that he's in on in future years, okay, yeah, 21 wins and in the 23-24 season or the 24-25 season, all right, that makes sense. But to have it already, I mean, it's pretty cool.
The secret to what has happened here is you had enough players who understood what the expectation was from the beginning. So they were able to teach their teammates, and their teammates liked them. Everybody seems to like each other. They all seem to like their head coach. You have talented coaches who understand the day-to-day of the game plan and the day-to-day of breaking down the film of the opponent and how to run. But the focus really seems to have been on Missouri doing Missouri things. The team has embraced its strengths and its weaknesses, and it's embraced its roles, and it understands each individual player that it might not be your night this night, but it might have to be your night the next night or the night after that. And when those sorts of things happen, you can take a team that Carolyn Westrup said, ain't no five stars on this team. Kobe Brown, I think now we would agree, is a five-star type of talent. But there's nobody that the recruiting services saw on this team and said, we're dropping our jaws for them. I mean, not even with all of his flowers, Aiden Shaw, right? But they understand what a team is, and Dennis Gates understand what a nucleus was, and, you know, anybody who kind of threw their pot shots out there saying Horizon League All-Stars, well, guess what? The Horizon League has good basketball players, just like the Sun Belt has good basketball players, just like whatever. Get them together and get them to play as a team and see what they do, and you can very clearly see that it's near the top of the SEC table if things continue progressing throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, I think Coach Gates was a pretty decent hire from Desiree Reed-Francois.
I think he's a pretty smart guy. Like, look, you could tell the moment you met the guy that, okay, this is going to probably work out pretty well. And it's worked out beyond some people's wildest expectations.
Well, I was just thinking about that when Iowa State was in town and, you know, Coach TJ from Iowa State, who's having a terrific year also. And that was also someone that Desiree Reed-Francois hired at UNLV. So it's been a nice run for DRF from her Las Vegas days. You could say she's on a heater.
Yes.
You don't stand up from the table when you're on the kind of role that she's on. In hiring.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. So as we move along, hey, Brad, the women's basketball team faced a couple of tough ones, faced a couple of tough performances on the road. And when the going gets tough, et cetera, et cetera, we know how the phrase ends, right? The Tigers have got to find their way out of a funk, and they will try to do that as we record it later on tonight against Vanderbilt at home. We don't know the result of that one, nor do we know the result of Sunday's contest against Alabama. The next two times, at least at the time we're recording this, they'll be in performance. But the one thing I have said about this team all season long is it is a team that wins with grit. So it has everything that it needs to dig out of what has been a tough stretch, especially after a letdown game at the very end against a good Tennessee team. You know, if there's any sort of hangover, that can be snapped pretty quickly with a good performance against the Doors and against the Tide. You can forget about those sorts of things very quickly in the Southeastern Conference.
It certainly helps. And similar to the men's situation, the women are halfway through their conference schedule, a little more than halfway now, and the harder stretch is behind them. So there is still the possibility, for sure, to turn things around. But yeah, sitting at 14-8 overall now, 3-6 in the SEC, you've got two home games coming up. And like you mentioned, that can really alter things, especially if you can beat an Alabama team that, as of now anyway, is on track to make the NCAA tournament. They have a very good net ranking. Mizzou was able to win there by a point in Tuscaloosa. That's, in fact, the last Mizzou win. Six games since then have not gone as great. But you do have that chance, and all of a sudden you're back to 5-6 with a chance for revenge against Arkansas on the road coming up on Super Bowl Sunday. But it seems like this year, and of course I thought I had a good feel for the committee last year and I turned out to be wrong, but 8-8 is probably the floor in terms of a conference record if you want to have a chance to get into the NCAA tournament. I don't think 7-9 is going to cut it this year when you've only got two SEC teams currently sitting in the top 25 in the AP rankings. 9-7, you're absolutely going to get there, I think. 8-8, you're sweating, but you're in the conversation for sure. So the goal for Mizzou down the stretch is to win five of your last seven games. And if you look at the way the schedule sets up, you've got four home games against teams that, in my opinion, are either at your level or below you in terms of the conference standings. You've got road games against very good Arkansas and Ole Miss teams, but not at the level of like the South Carolinas and LSUs and Tennessees of the world. Mm-hmm. So they are attainable, but they're going to be conference road tests, so they'll be difficult. And you have a road game against a Texas A&M team, which has a coaching transition in year number one that has been a struggle so far this year. So the opportunities are still there to get from 3-6 to like an 8-8 record or better, but the margin of error is gone now. I mean, you lose six straight conference games. I think that's pretty obvious. Offensively, Coach Pinchton said on the most recent Tiger Talk for her, which you can also catch on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast feed, they're going to be focusing on getting a lot of shots up. They're sitting at 39% from the field and 59 points per game in conference play right now. They're better shooters than that. We saw that when they started 14-2 on the year. Get more shots to go in the bucket. Get off to a good start with this Vanderbilt game coming up Thursday night, and then hopefully from there you can build a little bit of momentum going into what's going to be a tough test against Alabama and then beyond. And again, you've got a whole month left of basketball. Still opportunities to snap out of this and turn it around.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Speaking about some of the other Mizzou teams, the wrestling team is basically on its 13-day march to win the Big 12. They took a couple weeks off, got presumably healthier. You know, Coach Smith had said on some of these Tiger-style reports that, you know, there was protocol to be had for some of these athletes. So if you got guys out of the protocol and healthy and things like that are going on, I don't know how many college wrestling coaches in the country would feel very comfortable with a road trip to the Sooner State to go at Oklahoma and at Oklahoma State within the span of 3 days. But Brian Smith is built different, and so is his program. So they're going to try it. Oklahoma State, the Cowboys, are 12th ranked in the country. And I don't even think the rankings matter at this point so much as, hey, you want to win a regular season conference trophy? You have to go out and do it in these two. And then if you can get this Oklahoma double, and really, I mean, you consider it their places, it's like an upset. Maybe not over Oklahoma, but the Cowboys will be ready to go. And those duels over the years have been back and forth, nip and tuck. Then you have the home date, and it's the finale, and it's such a big one at home against the fourth ranked Iowa State Cyclones, and that better be a packed Hearn Center for a 6:30 p.m. start on the 15th. I think I got to wake up at 0:30 the next morning to travel with Mizzou baseball down to Dallas, and I think I'm going to be at that duel because of what it potentially can mean. Now, you have to take care of business first, but this is a stretch that not a lot of college wrestling teams go through at this part of the season, and Mizzou's like, you backloaded it, who cares? Let's go. So it's go time from this point forward for Brian Smith and company.
You know, it's kind of interesting, and you might remember that wrestling lost a couple of duels, which is uncommon for Mizzou to lose a duel ever at this point in the Brian Smith era. But you take a step back, so Mizzou is 6-2 in duels. They're back in the top 10 in the country, by the way. 6-2 in duels. Their only losses were both by 2 points against top 10 teams on the road.
Yeah.
A long way away, too. Arizona State and Virginia Tech, long road trips. So it's not like this team has fallen off the map or anything. Again, they're back in the top 10 nationally, and this time off you would think would help, and we'll see how they look with three Big 12 tests on the horizon, two of them against nationally ranked opponents like they are. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I think that we have a lot of fun still to come, and there's that one home duel left on the 15th, but these two this weekend are very, very important in terms of trajectory and momentum, and you normally see Tiger style getting its peak at the right time of year, so now's go time for that, and I'm excited to see how that looks going forward. Gymnastics team will be flipping out against Kentucky. It's a 5 p.m. Central start for Friday Night Heights, but they'd love to see a packet into the Hearns to make that a reality. The diving team is up in Northern Climbs at Colorado Springs, so both sets of divers get going there, and I mean, the SECs are right around the corner for swim and dive.
They are, and in a brand new episode of Truman's Pond, just out on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast feed, reigning SEC Scholar Athlete of the Year Jack Dahlgren is part of that episode that dropped on Wednesday, so you can get all up to speed on what's happening with swim and dive with those SEC championships looming, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and where am I forgetful?
Well, there were a couple of things. Obviously, we want to wish best of luck to Coach Westrup and her team, who kind of restart their season. They enter the spring portion. They'll be in Boca Raton for an event there starting on Monday of next week as we record this. I did want to mention in track and field, Isabel Sokolova set the program record with a time of 8.38 seconds in the women's 60-meter hurdles in Lubbock, Texas. That was last week, since the last time we had a podcast, so congrats to her. Some of the team was at the Indiana relays also. There were three first-place finishers, Quentin Worley in the 5,000, Christopher Conrad in the 800, and Kelsey Schweitzer in the women's mile. And I have to plead ignorance. I did not realize that we had another Schweitzer on the roster. That is Carissa Schweitzer's sister, so congratulations to her also. That was pretty cool. There was a football game in Kansas City on Sunday. I don't know if you were aware that a football game was held. The Chiefs...
A contest of American football?
Yes, American football. Thank you for the clarification. The Chiefs of Kansas City over the Bengals of Cincinnati, 23-20 was the final score of that one. I believe the facility where it was played is pronounced Arrowhead Stadium with an A. Four tackles for Mizzou alum Nick Bolton, according to Mizzou stat whiz Tom Orff. Bolton is already six tackles away from tying Justin Smith's record for most postseason tackles by a Tiger alum. Bolton's already at 33, and he's, what, 24 years old or something like that?
Mm-hmm. That's just it's wild. It has been wild to see how quickly Kansas City has relied upon Nick Bolton as a rock of its defense. And it has been so satisfying for Missouri fans to see that all the stuff you saw him do in college is stuff that translated to the next level. Despite whatever size, despite what his hand measures across, or whatever measurables you have, Mizzou fans could have told you, this man goes downhill and finds the football on running plays and blows it up. And oh, by the way, he's developed his pass rush. And oh, by the way, and most importantly for the NFL, he covers slot and tight end a lot better than he did in college. He has improved his game there. It has been remarkable to see. He is setting himself up for a long and fruitful career. I think every Mizzou fan's hope is that it can remain inside the Show Me State and at Kansas City for a long time. But if Nick Bolton wants to go get paid, nobody get upset for Nick Bolton getting paid. Because guess what? Dude's going to get paid,
well,
I think.
Hopefully he can get a ring first coming up on February 12th. But, you know, the best part
rings
of
rings are expensive.
They are. Yeah. The best part, you know, for as a Chiefs fan myself, on top of being a Mizzou fan, of course, but the best part about from a Chiefs perspective is it was a convincing win. There's no doubt from anybody at a national level that the Chiefs were the better team that day. No question marks there from any jabronis or otherwise.
Have you just waited like the better part of an hour to try your own hand at a
honestly,
Dwayne Johnson jabroni?
Yeah, honestly, I don't care. Bengals fans can eat it. I'm not worried about it. I'm not going to say anymore, though, because I mentioned Justin Smith earlier. Justin Smith was a Bengal for a good chunk of his career, and he lives not too far from the Hearn Center in Columbia, and he could grind me into dust. So yes. I'd rather he not do that. I'll pull back from the other thoughts I have on
Bengals. I am already distancing myself from my co-host comments in case Justin listens to the podcast. It will be fun in a couple of weeks, and so that'll be, again, a nice little thing to talk about with a Mizzou angle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a Mizzou player in the Super Bowl. And that's our angle. Never mind this whole Kelce Brothers stuff and mom's going to have to wear the half jersey. Like, that's cute. No, let's talk instead about middle linebacker play.
I think it's very important.
That's what you're looking
absolutely,
forward to
yeah.
Good here
value.
On the podcast. A big thanks to Caroline Westrup, of course, for being here, and a thanks to you for listening. We always have new stuff coming. I mean, the Diamonds are on the way. Might even get a little bit more hoops, trying to maybe hear from a couple more players here on the podcast as we go throughout time. So we're working on it for you. Stay with us. We'll be busy throughout the spring, and we're glad that you are here with us once again on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. Take care.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Matt Michaels and Brad Pranago. Brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Central Bank Tiger Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.